This is WAMC's Northeast Report Late Edition. I'm Brian Shields. California has debuted a new cap-and-trade program that auctions greenhouse gas pollution permits. While there has been a lot of attention about the California program, North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley reports there's been a similar effort in place in the Northeast for several years.
The Associated Press characterized the California Cap-and-Trade Emissions Initiative as landmark. CBS called it the most wide-ranging of its kind in the nation. The website for an NBC station in San Diego claims California is the first state in the nation to try to lower greenhouse gas emissions via cap-and-trade, and that it would be a national model. But a model program already exists. Since 2008, Northeast states have participated in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative to control carbon dioxide allowances. The Adirondack Council buys allowances during the quarterly auctions. Spokesman John Sheehan says the California and Northeast programs are similar.
It's very similar in its mechanism that it uses a cap and trade program for reducing carbon, but it's only one state, and of course the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative here in the East Coast is 10 separate states. One of the differences is that our program covers electric power plants only, and California is attempting a more economy-wide program at this point. They've also done something important in that they have set a minimum price for carbon allowances at $10. There is no minimum being set by the regional greenhouse gas governing body, and it's been down in the neighborhood of only a couple of bucks. California, they chose to set the minimum price, and I think that that should be the way it works.
ENE, Environment Northeast Director of Market Initiatives, Peter Shattuck.
I think REGI served as both an example and a proof of concept for California. When the REGI program launched 3 years ago, greenhouse gas cap and trade programs had not been rolled out in the U.S. So the way REGI has been seamlessly incorporated into the Northeast economy and created real benefits for participating states, I think, helped pave the way for the California program. One of the great successes of REGI was selling off the right to pollute rather than giving away these allowances, which are basically permits to release a ton of greenhouse gas. Instead of giving them away for free, the REGI states decided to auction them off and reinvest the proceeds in energy efficiency, which has the multiple benefits of reducing consumers' electricity bills, and it also reduces greenhouse gas emissions.
John Sheehan says REGI has set a tone and hopes the entire country will move to similar cap-and-trade programs.
California is improving on the model that is in place here in the Northeast in some ways, and I think that as we work to essentially get the rest of the states in between the Northeast and California to participate over time, that the program will change again, but hopefully it'll continue to progress toward a more efficient and effective way of controlling carbon.
ENE, Environment Northeast, reports that Quebec plans to launch a cap-and-trade program in 2013 and then link with California's economy-wide model in 2014. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
Plans are moving forward for the possibility of a new trial for former New York State Senate Majority Leader Joseph Bruno. The judge in the case was to meet with prosecutors and the defense today, just a day after the government filed papers claiming defense arguments for dismissing a second indictment against Bruno are without merit. The Rensselaer County Republican was convicted almost 2 years ago on two charges of honest services fraud, which were later dismissed on appeal. The U.S. attorney is seeking a new trial. Authorities say three members of the Saratoga Springs Police Department have been suspended after an off-duty altercation at a local bar. The police department announced last night it has launched an investigation after a man called police early Monday morning to report he had been assaulted by three people he believed were off-duty Saratoga officers. The alleged incident occurred at a Caroline Street bar in Saratoga's popular downtown district. Police officials say the man was treated for non-serious injuries and the three officers have been suspended pending the outcome of an investigation. The governor of Massachusetts recently announced a new plan to build thousands of new units of affordable housing in areas across the Commonwealth. One Berkshire town submitted a plan that will help provide displaced residents with permanent housing. Berkshire Bureau Chief Lucas Willard reports.
Yesterday, Governor Deval Patrick outlined a plan that he said would help build 10,000 new units of affordable housing annually in the Commonwealth. At the Under One Roof conference, the governor outlined what's called the Compact Neighborhoods Program, which promises to revitalize town centers by encouraging residential development. Undersecretary of Housing and Community Development Aaron Gorenstein said the state government is asking cities and towns to zone for well-planned urban residential communities.
Well, we're calling upon our municipal partners to provide zoning so that developers can come in and with community support to build more affordable and market-rate housing. And if those municipalities do that, the state will step up and provide priority access to important funding sources.
As an example, Gorenstein said that the state could help communities make infrastructure upgrades. Gorenstein said that the Compact Neighborhood Program joins other recent initiatives, including the Housing Development Incentive Program, or HDIP, designed to revitalize housing in gateway cities. Pittsfield is the site of the first HDIP project for its Anota Howard building, which will add 39 units of affordable housing and 10 units of retail space. But for other smaller communities in the Berkshires, affordable housing can be hard to find. Kathy Yamamoto, chair of Williamstown's Affordable Housing Committee.
We're a town of 6,000 residents and 2,000 college students, and the housing market is very tight. There is not housing available that people can afford who live on very limited incomes. We have just 150 units of subsidized housing in Williamstown.
According to Yamamoto, when Hurricane Irene struck last year and wiped out most of the Spruces Mobile Home Park, it created an even greater need for permanent replacement affordable housing. The town of Williamstown has filed for $6.2 million in funds through the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, to purchase the Spruces Park from owners Morgan Management, demolish the park, and in its place construct a permanent structure for low to moderate income residents displaced by Irene. Town Manager Peter Follin.
FEMA requirements are that all of this be completed within 3 years. So we have a lot of hustling to do. We're going to be not only thinking outside the box, I think we're going to be living outside the box for the next 36 months in order to accomplish all of this.
In a memo released by Follin, it stated that under Massachusetts state law, the residents of the Spruces will have at least 45 days to exercise their right of first refusal to purchase the park. Follin hopes, however, that the plan will put the people remaining in the ruined park out of harm's way. Reporting from WAMC's Berkshire Bureau at the Berkshire Eagle, I'm Lucas Willard.
Support for WAMC comes from Manja, a neighborhood bistro in Slingerland's independently owned and operated, a proud supporter of the Hudson Mohawk Land Conservatory, manjarestaurant.com. Handmade and More, New Paltz, offering a mix of American handcrafted and internationally made crafts and jewelry, plus toys, paper goods, and women's clothing and accessories, 845-255-6277 and on Facebook. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, providing legal and consulting services to life insurers in a changing regulatory climate, currancompliance.com.
With your WAMC business update, I'm Patrick Donges. U.S. stocks plummeted to close the day. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 185 points at 12,570. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index closed down 19 points at 1,355. The NASDAQ Composite Index closed down 37 points at 2,846. Mutual fund shareholders aren't budging from their recently conservative approach to investing despite this year's stock market gains. Cash was pulled from stock funds for the 8th month in a row in October, while bond funds attracted cash for the 14th consecutive month. Industry consultant Strategic Insight reports that net $15 billion was withdrawn from U.S. stock funds last month. The Standard & Poor's 500 index was up 12% for the year through October, yet the last time that deposits into stock funds exceeded withdrawals was in February. Starbucks is ramping up its tea business with a $620 million purchase of Atlanta-based tea seller Teavana. The coffee giant said today it sees a growing market for tea. Starbucks already owns the Tazo tea brand. Starbucks plans to expand Teavana Holdings Incorporated's network of 300 mall-based stores and add other kinds of stores as well. Teavana shareholders will receive $15.50 per share in cash in the deal, which is expected to close by the end of the year. Stay tuned for more business news on Marketplace at 6:30.
Support for WAMC comes from Tech Valley Communications, providing direct-to-business fiber optic connections for high-speed internet, voice, and data services on the company's own First Light fiber optic network, techvalleycom.com. Now the regional weather summary.
Following record and near-record warmth on Monday, a cold front came through early yesterday, pushing the mild air out to sea and opening the door to some pretty chilly air for mid-November, and that cool weather theme will remain with us as we go through the next few days. In fact, the weather is pretty much what you see is what you get as we move through the remainder of the week into the weekend, with cold nights featuring temperatures mainly in the 20s, and cooler cold days depending on your perspective, with highs running mainly in the 40s for the remainder of the week. Across the area this afternoon, we are looking at mainly sunny skies. That clear sky trend will continue as we move into the night. The only clouds showing up in New York State are well to our west. To the south of Lake Ontario, there are some stubborn low clouds this afternoon, but it appears those clouds are going to play very little role in our weather. So we're looking at high pressure that will be with us with clear skies tonight. It's going to be cold as temperatures fall back into the 20s in most areas, though we may see a few spots in the mountains slip back into the teens late at night. Coming up during the day tomorrow, sunshine will dominate once again, and temperatures will be fairly similar to what we've seen today. They'll be mainly in the 40s across the area, though it's certainly possible that some of the coldest spots in the mountains may hold in the upper 30s. Quiet weather continues into Friday with partly to mostly sunny skies. Temperatures will once again be in the 40s, and the quiet weather goes into Saturday. Notice it's kind of like a broken record. Temperatures will be once again mainly in the 40s across the region. Across the nation, quiet weather is the dominant theme, so we are dealing with tranquil conditions and there's no big storms on the weather map through the entire United States, at least in the lower 48. So everybody enjoying a bit of a weather breather here as we move through the mid part of the week. And now here's my latest regional forecast. First, for the North Country, the Adirondacks, all of Vermont, the Southern Champlain Valley, including Plattsburgh and Burlington, and the Lake George Saratoga region, including Glens Falls. For tonight, mostly clear and cold, low 20 to 25, some teens in the mountains. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high 40 to 45. For the Northern Catskills, Mohawk Valley, and Southern Adirondacks, including Utica and Gloversville. Tonight, mostly clear and cold, low 20 to 25, some teens in the mountains. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high 40 to 45. For the southeastern Catskills, mid and lower Hudson Valley, and interior southern New England, including Middletown, Poughkeepsie, Westchester, Hartford, and Springfield. Tonight, mostly clear and cold, low 25 to 30, and tomorrow mostly sunny, with highs in the middle to upper 40s. For the Capital District, including Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, and the Berkshires. Tonight, mostly clear and cold, low in the 20s, tomorrow mostly sunny, high in the lower to middle 40s. Region-wide on Friday, partly to mostly sunny, high in the 40s to around 50, and continued mostly sunny on Saturday, with highs again in the 40s to around 50. For WAMC, I'm meteorologist Garrett Argianis.
You're listening to WAMC's Northeast Report, late edition. It's been more than 2 weeks now since Sandy caused severe damage up and down the eastern seaboard, including heavy damage in New York City and some areas just north of the city in Westchester County. Local governments and homeowners in Westchester County are still trying to recover from the storm as they work to dispose pounds and pounds of debris. WAMC's Patrick Donges spoke today with Robert Marchant, staff reporter at the Journal News from the Mount Kisco office.
It's a big, big job out there for both homeowners and municipal road crews. The DPWs in many communities are working through the weekends and racking up overtime, picking up wood and debris from the hurricane. Homeowners are looking at big, big charges for removal, paying trash haulers and cleanup crews up to $10,000 in some cases.
Are these costs that either local governments or homeowners are saying they can afford, or is this the type of thing they'll be looking for some kind of support from the federal government?
At this point, it's a bit of a guessing game. FEMA is expected to cover the cost of the municipalities, road crews going out and picking up wood. Homeowners themselves, I think there is a bit of a guessing game on whether their insurance will pay for certain kinds of cleanup, whether FEMA might pay for certain kinds of cleanup. At this point, it's still a little bit of an unknown.
What's the nature of the debris that is out there? Is it mostly home debris? Is it mostly trees?
You're seeing a little bit of everything. A lot of tree damage, certainly tree branches. They say this storm was almost a perfect storm and as a tree killer. The way the wind patterns worked, it brought down many, many trees and tree branches. So tree and tree limbs are obviously a very big source of debris at this point. But in some of the towns along the Hudson River, you're seeing everything, all kinds of debris, washing up even boats that have washed up on shore, telephone poles, and lots of household debris that's been thrown out, moldy carpets, drywall, broken furniture. We spoke to one homeowner the other day who had been running a chainsaw for the past week or two, chopping up his old furniture and putting it out on the street.
Is there any sense of a timeline at this point from the official side as to when this job could be completed on either a local or a countywide basis?
Local leaders are asking people to be patient. It's the nature of the storm was enormous, and the cleanup is enormous as well. So people are asking for patience. Towns are really struggling in many places to keep up with the demands of removing all this debris. It's anybody's guess, really, how long it'll take and how much it'll cost before all is said and done.
Now, the governor has, in his briefings since the storm, talked a little bit about his outlook on, and while he didn't say climate change, on extreme weather events and the idea that part of the recovery and rebuilding process will be looking at whether or not to rebuild in certain areas. Are you getting a sense that any municipalities there might be considering whether or not to rebuild and or demolish areas that were particularly hard hit?
I think that's going to be part of the discussion going forward in the longer term time frame. Just anecdotally, talking to municipal officials, global warming does seem to come up in conversation. So it's certainly, I think, a subtext to a number of the discussions that are going on post-Hurricane Sandy.
Is that typical among those officials that global warming would come up?
It has come up on more than a few occasions, talking to local and municipal officials. It does seem to be on the back of people's minds, and I think that might have an impact as the ramifications of the hurricane are eventually put to rest.
That's Robert Marchant of the Journal News speaking with WAMC's Patrick Donjes. You can read more of his work online at lohud.com. It is nearly impossible not to leave a carbon footprint on the planet, even in death. But Buffalo's largest cemetery is trying to make dying more environmentally friendly. Here's Daniel Robinson.
Forest Lawn is a sprawling cemetery with more than 800 acres, 14 miles of road, and
162,000 souls under our perpetual care. They're joined by about 1,000 people a year who stay.
Joseph DePinza is the president of Forest Lawn, a name that evokes idyllic images of the site's natural settings. It's hundreds of trees, middling brooks, and hilly terrain. Now, the site is trying to boost its nature cred even more by offering something known as a green burial, which has less environmental impact than traditional methods.
Really, green burial is the oldest burial there is. I mean, in this country, go west, young man. as they were going in their horses and carriages across the plains and a loved one died, they buried him there on the spot with whatever they could fashion together for a dignified burial. A shroud, perhaps a blanket, perhaps some wood that could be spared and turned into a box or a coffin, if you will.
Modern-day green burial is not too far removed from that. It often involves no embalming, a practice that is relatively new among the general populace. It went mainstream in the 1860s when bodies were shipped home during the Civil War to be seen one last time by family. For green burials, there's no strict definition, but most involve a simple biodegradable casket made of wood, wicker, or bamboo that requires no outer burial container, allowing the deceased to be reabsorbed into nature more quickly.
So there isn't a list that says, well, if you want this for green burial, it's this or that. No.
Okay.
You buy a grave. Do you want to be in there in a casket, in an urn, scattered, in a shroud, embalmed, not embalmed? 100% natural fabrics and fibers, to perhaps just a topical preparation, and then interment. So there's a lot of variations.
Some even prefer the plot to be dug by hand, rather than by a machine that runs on diesel. But DePinza warns, these practices are not likely to become the norm. And some choose the green burial option without taking logistics into account, especially if relatives live a ways away.
Wishing for a green burial for a parent when you're not going to come to Buffalo for 10 days, that's going to make it difficult as best. And I don't know how to say that more delicately. For a green burial, you need time is of the essence, so as not to cause either a health department or a health concern or public health concern, or perhaps an emotional upset to the family.
These burial methods are becoming more popular across the world, partly because they're cheaper. New green-only cemeteries are opening, including one in Newfield, New York, just south of Ithaca. It resembles a wide-open, overgrown field, and there are no headstones. All in all, it's whatever works for the people involved, says DePinza. What's important is that green burials maintain the deceased's dignity while not harming the planet any more than necessary.
So it's inclusive rather than restrictive. So there are multiple levels, if you will, or as I've heard people say, multiple shades of green.
In Buffalo, I'm Daniel Robison.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. Support for WAMC comes from Albany Vegan Network, presenting their 6th annual Capital Region Vegetarian Expo with cooking demos, speakers, and more, open to the public Saturday, November the 17th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Polish Community Center, Albany, nyvegetarianexpo.org. Skidmore College Master's Program offering individualized graduate studies in a wide range of interdisciplinary fields, masters at skidmore.edu. Truppiana Uniforms, Kingston, New York. Uniforms for healthcare professionals, firefighters, police, and chefs. Holiday gift certificates available. We care for the people who take care of others. Uniforms.com. Thank you for joining us today on WAMC's Northeast Report Late Edition. Our engineer, Zach Malloy. I'm Brian Shields. Marketplace is next. Support comes from the Gazette. Local news, local sports, local classifieds, and more. In print or online, dailygazette.com.